Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Frost. My guest today is international four-star eventer Lauren Blades. Her business is called Shannon Eventing, and she kindly shares some advice on how to make your yard and your business more professional, along with some stories of her eventing and Lauren's horses. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. Today we have a lovely lady called Lauren Blade. She's a four-star event rider, and I was introduced to Lauren by one of her owners because I was fascinated to understand the role that's played between an owner and a rider. And so the lovely Miranda said, you must talk to Lauren. She's an amazing rider. She's doing all these incredible things. And more importantly, she absolutely adores my horse. So welcome to the Horse Hour podcast, Lauren. How are you?
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm great.
Isn't that a really lovely thing to know, though, that your owner, one of the owners of your horses, not only loves you riding, but knows that you care about her horse so much, which is really important to her?
Yeah, well, we're a really small team at home, and our owners are really quite a lovely bunch of people. And that's something that we all have in common, really, is that we're all doing it for the love of the horses more than anything. And it's kind of brought a really lovely group of people together, actually.
Well, it's quite hard, isn't it, I think, in our industry, because it's so competitive now that sometimes the owners get competitive. And I do feel that not a lot of the time they're putting the horses first, but it's almost like it's refreshing to hear that the horses are put first now, because there's so much money involved and there's so much time involved. And I just love to hear that both riders and owners are on the same page.
Yeah, it's something that we've, you know, learned over time, really, is that if you end up working with like-minded people, then it's so much easier to get results and to get, you know, to get through those really pressured situations. So it actually kind of becomes self-selecting. You know, we kind of end up dealing with lovely people who love their horses and work with them for the same reasons that we do.
And the proof's in the pudding, because it's working, isn't it? You're doing really well at the moment. Where have you been competing lately?
We've kind of been all over. Our spring season's just finished. So we were at Tattersalls in Bramham this spring. Our season begins in March with British Eventing, so we're basically out every weekend from the beginning of March. We have a bit of a lull in June, and then it kind of all starts kicking off again now, and the autumn campaign starts.
Do you ever get that moment where you think, oh man, I just need a break? Like, because it's a lot. Eventing is really full on, isn't it?
It is full on in the season, but luckily we do always try and have a really quiet June and then a really quiet end of the season. So we're very lucky in that respect. And to be honest, I think I kind of thrive off of the fact that we're doing something every weekend.
And do you have any partners? Do they mind you being busy every weekend?
So my husband and I have been together for 7 years now. And I think I'd known him probably 2 weeks before he came onto the yard because really that's the only time he's ever going to see me is if he comes to the yard. So he actually, I think probably 4 years ago, gave up his job and started working with me in order that we could expand the business. And so now we work together as well. And to be honest, I couldn't do it without him.
Oh, what did he do before?
He's always worked in rural industries. He's worked in estate management and in shooting. So he's always worked in kind of rural industry, but definitely never with horses before.
It's so funny because my husband's very similar in that he's never worked on an estate, but you know, he now works on our little farm that we have, and so teaching him to do DIY and put up fencing was hilarious for the first time, you know, and then eventually he got to grips with it, whilst previously he wasn't even allowed to put up a picture frame until we got the yard. But it's quite fun, isn't it, having them around, being, you know, them being really part of it. And then I guess you still then get that family time, but it is really important to take time out and actually just enjoy time with each other as a family, and then enjoy your horses as well, because otherwise it can become a bit of a chore, can't it?
Yeah, well, and what Tom's brought to it is he's brought a real air of professionality to it, because he, having never worked in the equestrian industry, doesn't abide this idea that we should be any less professional than any other industry. So, you know, he's been really good for me and for our business, because he's pulled us up by the socks, and everything we do is all above board and legal, and he knows where we stand with everything. And, you know, it kind of gives you a real confidence in what you do, because you know he's got every base covered. And to be honest, I actually couldn't do it without him. So he gets lots of kudos.
The equestrian industry can be seen as a hobby. And when you're making that step from a hobby to a professional business, I absolute kudos to you both for doing it all completely properly, because I don't know why. I mean, everything should be done properly, including the invoicing and the tax and the, you know, the health and safety and the employment. It actually is a business. But we do find that we let things go because it started as a hobby.
Well, exactly. And I think because it, for so many people, it grows organically. So it grows from being in the back garden and doing it with your mum to kind of slowly progressing into something more. And if you're not careful, then suddenly you find yourself, you know, with looking at something that is now a fully fledged business, except for the fact that you've skipped so many steps in between. So it's very good having him around, because he's a real dose of fresh air.
But it's important as well, Lauren, and I think you're a great advocate for people that are running businesses, because to say, you know, you should do it properly, because I really believe that. And, you know, I have a livery yard myself, and I send out contracts, and I apologize every time I send out a contract. I send it and say, I'm really sorry that I've got to do this, because it's ridiculous. I've worked in so many industries, but for some reason this one, I feel like apologizing for every time I do anything that could be seen as, you know, legal, or, you know, I just feel a bit too much. But we do need it to protect ourselves, I guess.
And what you have to remember is that it protects you, but it also protects the client. And ultimately, what can seem like something slightly awkward at the beginning, what you're actually doing is kind of quantifying your worth, you know, because you're saying, this is a service I'm providing. This is something that's worth money and worth time to both me and you. And let's make sure that we're all protected in this. And actually, that's what we found, is that as we've raised our standards in that respect, we found that the people who have sought us out and who now work with us, you know, clients, owners, that kind of thing, are now people with very similar ethos to us and very similar mindsets. So it helps kind of make your business self-selecting, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to hear your side of the coin as well, because there are many livery yards out there and riding schools, but then you ride for owners as well. So what I hear from 2-star and 3-star riders is they're so grateful for the support from the owners that they find it hard to make that step. So how did you make that change from, I'm sure you're super, super grateful, but then to, like you said, saying, you know, I'm good enough to actually get paid to do this and make it into a fully fledged contract business.
Yeah, I think that's a very thin line, you know, and it's a hard one to kind of walk sometimes. But you do find that people will push that line as much as they can. And it's not because they're, you know, being pushy with you and thinking they can walk all over you, but because you have to remember it's an expensive sport and they don't want to spend money if they don't have to. And the other thing is that for every person who has to pay the mortgage and pay the staff and do everything, you know, properly, there's probably someone who can work from home and can do everything pretty much themselves, so they don't have to, you know, pay extra staff. And so there's always somebody who will probably be able to undercut you on price. So I think for us, it was that realization, well, we're never going to be the cheapest because we've got to make ends meet. So you have to find your USP. You have to find, you know, what is slightly different from everybody else and what can give you that unique selling point that makes it worth it for people. And for me, that was the realization that owners do want to be involved with their horses. You know, the owners that we have, they want to know what's going on. They want good communication. They want to know that we care for the horses as much as they care for the horses. And then you have to, you know, it takes a certain amount of balls, because then you have to stand up and say, great, you know, now I've realized that, I'm going to put a price on it. And that price has to be more than what it costs me to do it, because I've got to make some money.
No, it's so true. Yeah. And like you said earlier, it is knowing your worth.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I do think that's something, traditionally that I have struggled with. And it's something that you almost have to set your price and then you have to stick by it. And if it means you're quiet for a month, you have to think, it's just allowing me time to do more networking, to do more marketing, to, you know, it's giving me more opportunity to create the situation that will allow for a better horse to come into that stable, or, you know, an owner with three horses rather than one, or, you know, it's like, you know, you kind of have to think, even something not going perfectly or meaning that you're a little bit quiet should be giving you opportunity, rather than thinking, oh God, I've put my prices up and now I, you know, now no one wants to come to me.
But how do you deal with owners that maybe become a little bit overfamiliar? Because we find that in our industry as well, is that they is because we're looking after their pride and joy, we're looking after their babies, sometimes they become your friend. But I was always told that when someone's paying you, then they're not your friend. You know, if they're your friend, you do it for free. But then you can't run a business if you're doing everything for free. So, again, it's another fine line, isn't it, between at what point are they a friend as opposed to being a client?
Yeah, well, I think this is where maybe I differ slightly. I do think someone can be both. But I think you just have to be very good at separating the two. You know, it's one thing to go out to dinner with them and to party with them and, you know, to invite them to your wedding, that kind of thing. You know, I have owners and clients who came to our wedding, and, you know, we see them on a very social level. But when I get on their horse, I get on their horse and compete their horse with them, knowing that I'm doing it professional. I'm not hungover from a party the night before. I'm not, you know, flying by the seat of my pants. I've done my preparation and I'm doing a job for them. And luckily, to be honest, we've really never found that line has crossed, really. I'd say the only other thing we have is that when we were building our yard, because our yard is a yard we've built from scratch, so the house is already there. When we were designing the yard, we contemplated either putting the yard in front of or behind the house. And rather than put it behind the house so that people could drive past the house, we've put the yard in front so that people don't see our house. And actually, our clients don't come to our front door. You know, it's the yard is the yard. People don't come to the house. And that seems to be a very good thing as well. So if we're having a day off, people don't come to the house.
No, and I think when you're working that closely with people, they're kind of respectful as well to your time. Most people respect that. They understand that you need to have a work-life balance, and they just expect you to put everything into their horses while you're with them, which is fair enough, I think. How long have you had your owners with you?
Some of them quite a while, and some of them fairly new. We've got some owners who have been with us probably since before we built the yard where it is now. So that's probably 8 or 9 years. And then some that have come on board fairly recently. And there seems to be kind of a natural progression where every couple of years we get a couple more owners coming on board. And that might be because we have space come up, and it might be because we've been recommended. And so we don't have a huge turnover of owners, if that makes sense. But we do get new blood every so often.
And that's nice. It keeps it fresh as well, doesn't it? To have new people around, I guess, with new ideas. And it, like you said earlier, if they're all like-minded, then hopefully everybody gets on quite well. And Lauren, can you share a little bit about your history? Because you've got such an eclectic accent.
Yeah, I was actually born in this country. I was born down in Brighton. All my extended family still live down there. But when I was three, my parents moved out to the States for work. And so me and my younger sister went with them and grew up in the States, very quintessential small town in the middle of the Rocky Mountains, with really not very many horses around. You know, it was only through a friend I met at primary school who had a ranch that we ended up going and even seeing horses. And my dad does say he remembers when we first went to the ranch, and he said, "You got out of the car screaming because you were scared of the dogs that were running around." You know, that's how much of a kind of non-animal kid I was. He said, "But then you looked up at this horse," and he said, "Your whole life was decided there and then. You know, there was nothing else you were going to do with your life." So I grew up there and I went to high school. And then because I had been born in this country, I was a British citizen, so I couldn't do Young Riders in the States. And also where we lived was not really conducive to a competition schedule. So I happened to meet Mark and Tanya Kyle. Mark's an Irish event rider. Tanya was a British event rider. They now mostly show jump with their daughter, Tabitha. I met them on the off chance, and they offered me a place as a working pupil. And so I came over and did a summer as a working pupil and decided that, yes, this was in fact what I wanted to do with the rest of my life.
Wow. So you really had it set then. You were driven. You knew what you wanted to do.
Yeah. I remember having breakfast with a lot of girlfriends before I moved to England when I finished high school. And they were all, you know, trying to decide which university they were going to. And they were wondering what it was they wanted to do with their life. And I remember one of my girlfriends saying, "Just so jealous, because you just, at least you know."
And your parents, did they move back to the UK with you, or did they just say, you know, good luck?
No, they're still in the States. Yeah, they love where they live, and I love it too. It's great for a holiday. and they're not horsey people. You know, they're enjoying where they live, and I've got extended family down south, so I'm only a few hours from them. So yeah, it kind of works well. I always say a good ocean really helps you get along with your parents, because you know when you need them.
So how did you end up then making the move from, because you're in Leicestershire now, so from when you moved back to the UK, did you move straight to Leicestershire, or did you do some travelling around, or how did it work out?
So because I came as a working pupil for Mark and Tanya, they were based at Arena UK, which is a show centre in Lincolnshire. So I was based with them for a year. And then that was basically my gap year. And then I applied to five universities, basically the closest ones to where they were. So I kind of went as far up as York and as far down as Cambridge. And I ended up going to Loughborough University. And when I came to Loughborough, Mark and Tanya happened to move their yard to a village called Wimeswald, which is about 20 minutes outside of Loughborough, near to Nottingham. And so I basically started renting a yard off of them, because they have a much bigger setup where they are now. And rented a yard from them for 5 or 6 years through uni and after it. And then we bought our place and built our yard. So we're now next door neighbours to them.
Oh, wow. Gosh, that's amazing. So actually, at a very young age, you were going to uni and running a business at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. Which did result in me mostly running a business and not doing very much uni.
No. So did you complete uni?
No, I did the first 2 years.
Well, to be fair, Lauren, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised you did 2 years at all, because, or even the thought process of going to, you know, even signing up to university, because most of us, when we're hell bent on having horses, we know where we want to go. It's like uni doesn't even come into it, you know?
Yeah, I know. But it does. I mean, I think uni is great either when you don't know what you want to do or when you're doing a very specific vocation. But I was studying English, which was never really going to help me run a business. And then I switched to business studies. But equally so, you know, macroeconomics isn't really going to help you run a small business.
So, well, I don't know. I feel like we need it right now.
I know.
And how, when did you meet your husband?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So I just met him probably about 8 years ago now, just through mutual friends, very boring, just at a birthday party. And we'd actually met the year previously at the Cottesmore Summer Ball. But we'd just been on the same table. And I remember saying hello to him, and then he promptly went out of my mind. You know, like I just met him in passing, and then didn't see him for a year, and then met him at this birthday party. And yeah, we've been together ever since.
Oh, it's lovely. So it wasn't love at first sight to start with then, seeing as... although I hear that a lot when people get married. They're like, oh no, I didn't even really fancy them to start with. They were a grower.
I know, poor Tom, he'll kill me for saying this. But my big issue, I remember ringing my sister after I first met him, and you know, properly. And I rang my sister and she said, oh, where are you? And I said, oh, I'm just coming back from a date. And she said, oh, is he nice? And I said, oh yeah, he's lovely. I said, oh, but he really is short. And he's not short, he's 5'10", but, you know, he wasn't 6'3". Oh. The poor guy had to work very hard.
Well, clearly that wasn't a non-negotiable. He won that one in the end.
Yeah, exactly.
And what was it like when he first introduced... Because how did you introduce yourself? Did you introduce yourself as a rider, as a yard owner, as a businesswoman? How did you introduce what you do?
Yeah, well, I just told him I was an event rider, but he actually, I think he knew of me already from the horses. I think he, you know, because of the industry he was in and also the mutual friends we had, he kind of already knew kind of what I was up to. But I think I did a really good job of making it look a lot more professional than it probably was at the time from the outside. You know, I think he kind of met me thinking, wow, this woman's really got her shit together. And then he met me more and he was like, okay, wait, actually, she's fine.
She needs me. She needs some help.
Yeah, exactly.
I just find it really fascinating, the first introduction to the horses, you know, of like, okay, this is us. We're really together. We're okay. And then we introduce them to the horses and everything just goes out the window. The first time that they have to poo pick the field, the first time they have to put hay out. And it's like they have the look on their face of, what have I walked into? Like, how early do you introduce them to this world of what a worm is and why you need to look for worms in poo?
I remember saying to him once, I said, oh, do you want me to teach you how to, because he was leading and filling water buckets and he could do those kind of, you know, very more simple tasks. Mm. And I said, oh, do you want me to teach you how to pick out their feet? And he looked at me and just went, no, because if you teach me, I'll have to do it more.
Yeah. Oh, bless him.
And by the way, he does now know how to pick out feet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I bet he knows how to wrap, to bandage, to lead, first aid. He's got to know it all now. And then, you know, 7 years down the line, 8 years down the line, you're now married and you've got your own yard and together as a couple, which I think is really lovely. So can you tell me more about your horses then, Lauren? Because you've tell me some of the places that you've ridden at recently.
Well, so this year we've ridden at Tattersalls and Bramham. With a couple horses, two horses who are both mares called Jamila and Freckleton Mythago. And Jamila is a new ride for me this year, but Margo, the Freckleton Mythago horse, is a mare I took on last year. And she is one of those horses who's, she's 12 years old now, so she's really in her prime. but for different reasons, she's missed out on a season here or there, or been a bit from pillar to post. And she is one of those horses that just took a little bit of understanding and getting our head round. And she's a really exciting horse. And the family who own her, the Davenports, Katie and Jamie, and they've got three children as well. They're incredibly supportive of all the work we've done with her. It's been a real fast track with her. I did two novices on her last year, and then this year she did one intermediate, and then she went straight to a 4-star short, and then did another 4-star short. So wow, she kind of has not had many runs this season, and has really ramped up the technicality and what she's doing. And she's one of those horses that just wants it, you know, she really, really wants it. So she's a very exciting horse for us to be working with. And then I've got a lovely gelding called Rodnikova Dream, whose owner Angela Schumann lives in Norfolk. And he's competing at 3-star level. He just went to Houghton this year in Norfolk for his first long format 3-star. And he's, again, another horse I think a lot of. He is a very big horse. He is by Jaguar Male, which means he is only 17.2, but he looks about 18.2.
Oh, and Jaguar Male is owned by Lucinda Fredericks, is that right?
Well, she bred Britannia's Male, who I think he's a son of Jaguar Male. So Jaguar Male, the stallion itself, I think he is standing at Twemlow Stud in the UK this year, but I don't think he's owned by Lucinda.
Oh, okay, my mistake.
Yeah, but he's a prolific eventing sire. So this horse has plenty of jump, and he actually is half brother to Miranda Harrison's horse, the Coulston Topcat, who he's also by Jaguar Male, again another very big horse that Miranda has produced from a 4-year-old. She bought him as a foal, produced him all the way up through novice level, and I was teaching her on him. And basically she kind of got to novice and was very successful with him at novice, but I think that's kind of where her legs want to stop kicking, probably the nicest way to say it, because, you know, at the end of the day, she's got more than just event horses to do. She runs a livery yard. She's very busy. So she asked if I'd like to take on the ride, to take him up to intermediate. And again, same kind of outlook as the other two horses I was mentioning, you know, he just wants to do it. And, you know, when they want to do it, even if they're not, you know, physically the most natural horse, although I'd say TC is pretty, you know, strong physically, you know, even if they're not perfect, which no horse is, if they just want it, they'll find a way to make it happen. And I truly believe that that is the making of an event horse.
I'm fascinated. I'm listening to you intently because I feel like I've just planned my yearling's life now forever. So he's going to go to Miranda when he's 3, because I literally don't have a clue what I'm doing. So he needs to go to Miranda. And then he's going to move on to you, Lauren, because I really believe he's going to be huge. He's standing at 15 hands already and he's only 14 months old. He's very bold. Yeah, he is. And he's very bold and brave. And I'm finding from watching his mannerisms and his personality now, I think he could easily make it as an eventer or a show jumper, because he just has exactly what you're saying. They want to do it. You know, he'll canter down the side of the field along the fence line and he'll jump his water bucket just for fun. So yeah. they do have it in them. But also, is there a line, do you ever find that horses that want to do things, but also horses that want to do it for you, that maybe, how do you find, distinguish that difference between horses that just want to do anything they can for you as their rider and their owner because they trust you, as opposed to because it's ingrained in them and it's just natural?
Yeah, it's to be honest, I think the two probably go hand in hand. You know, a horse only, you only know that a horse wants to do it if you give them the opportunity to do it and then back off and say, okay, do you want it? You know, horses in training, they might occasionally need telling, but most of the time they need showing. And I think if you show a horse what you want and then they pick up that slack and say, yep, now I'm gonna take the information you've given me, and I'm gonna move that forward. That's, you know, that's what you want. And I think that's a big progression for a rider. And I think that's probably a very big difference between amateurs and professionals, is that amateurs, I often find, because I do a lot of teaching, they want to know how they make it happen. And they, you know, they do need to make it happen. They need to use their legs loads more than they think. They probably need to have their hands lower than they think. And, you know, there's different ways that you can tell horses to do things correctly. But ultimately, you're not doing it for them. At the base of the fence, you sit back, you let them jump the fence, you know. And so I kind of think the two go hand in hand.
Mm. I wouldn't be able to do, I can't make a horse do anything, Lauren. It's like I just sit and kick and hope. And, you know, I want to turn left. We go, come on, everybody.
There are worse things to do than sit and kick and hope.
So for riders then that are making that leap from amateur to professional, the only difference I can hear is that a professional gets paid for doing what they do, whilst an amateur has to pay for themselves. But there are a lot of 2-star, 3-star riders that are being paid to ride at that level. Would they be considered as professionals?
Well, yeah, and that's where I don't think you can really look at the level, because if we say that you can't be professional until you're a 3-star rider, you know, I know plenty of people who produce and ride incredibly well and do really, really great things with horses, but they never work with them after they're 5 years old. You know, they just produce them when they're young. So so I don't think it's that you have to be competing at a certain level. I think having competed at a certain level probably gives you confidence and a certain intuition for those competition situations. But it doesn't, you know, the best competitor in the world isn't necessarily the best horse trainer in the world, if that makes sense.
So I don't
think you have to be, but equally so, I don't think you have to be one or the other. You know, you can be a trainer, a producer, and a competitor. But I think the most important thing is that if you want to do it professionally, is that you find what sets you apart from everybody else, and whether that's how you treat the horses, whether that's the experience you can give your owners, whether that's the fact that you've got amazing facilities, so it means that you can give a horse a lot of experience, you know, through your own facilities over for short-term training or whatever, you know, you find that and you work with that.
Can you move down to the New Forest, please, Lauren? That would be fabulous. Can you just come and set up down here? Maybe we need a twin of yours. We just need to make like loads of little mini Laurens all around the UK. It would be fabulous. Because I think it's fabulous. Do you have your own?
The New Forest sounds lovely for a holiday.
Yeah. Do you have a cross country course as well?
Field Farm Cross Country is literally next door to us, which is a schooling cross country course run by Joe Shields, who's a BHS AI instructor. And so we do have access to a cross country course within very close hacking distance, you know, about 600 yards.
Oh, amazing.
And that is the reason we're based where we're based still, is it's, you know, it's a very horsey area. Vailview Equestrian Center is 5 minutes down the road. So many events are within an hour and a half of us. You know, I know that the Southeast has always traditionally been a big eventer area in the UK, but actually, you know, where we are is a fantastic place to kind of produce and train event horses. So I don't see us ever wanting to move from this area while we're doing what we're doing.
No, and so many people are moving now from the south further up north because, you just get so much more for your money. There's more land available. There's less.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful. Everything's, you're rocking it up there. Everything's up there. I'm in the wrong part of town. I've got too many hills around me. But, I'm hearing people are moving to Leicestershire, Lincolnshire, Yorkshire, you know, it's just all these horsey places up in the Midlands. And actually, I think maybe British eventing is seeing that now, which is why we've got less competitions. There are less events down here. You know, they're both mostly based up the Midlands and up north as well, which in for you guys, it's great. But it's also sad for the eventers that are down south that are trying their hardest to compete and to get those points to be able to qualify, because they don't have as many events to go to.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, like I'd never been to Bicton, which was way down south, but I think they lost their international status this year. I'm not sure if it's
been reinstated. Oh, they did, Lauren. It was so sad because they worked, yeah. Helen and the team worked so hard for many years, and it was a beautiful event with great facilities. And really, we expected that to go up and up and up in terms of stars and just popularity, really. It was such a lovely, well-run event. So it was a shame to see that go.
Yeah. And that's something that I'm probably guilty of as well, is that because we're so busy with the horses, we're not that involved in how eventing is run in this country. You know, British eventing is, I would say, possibly not the most well-liked membership organization in the world, because our entry fees and everything seem to go up each year. And I don't know that the service we're getting is remarkably better for that inflation, but I think the hard thing is that it's very difficult to be involved in the running of your sport when you're so busy competing in the sport. Like I was saying, we're out competing every weekend. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the things like the ERA, the Event Riders Association, which is run by Bruce Haskell, is so important, because it gives riders a mouthpiece, and it gives them a line of contact with the membership organization. And I think that's probably something that all of us riders need to get better about, is voicing our concerns and our issues, and finding a way to get the membership to kind of sit up and listen a bit.
Mm. Fair point. And how would you suggest riders do that? Do you think, does every rider need to be part of the membership, or can you ride without being a member of BE?
Well, you can compete without being a member of BE on day tickets instead, which I believe once you do more than, you can only do 4 events a year on day tickets, and then you have to purchase either a half-year membership or a full-year membership. And I kind of think, If you want an opinion and you want a voice in how events are run, then you probably do need to be a member.
But
that's something that I know as a rider I have been lax on, and something that I would like to be more involved in.
Really? Well, you should go and join, see if you can join the board. Quite often I get emails of gaps in the board and things. You know, you should totally put your name forward, Lauren.
When there's more time, maybe.
Yeah. Well, you've only got to join like 4 or 5 meetings a year. You'll be fine. Everybody will tell you what to say. You'll be you can be the mouthpiece for your area. I'm sure the guys will love that. Lauren, thank you so much. And would you mind just giving us a few little bits of advice for anybody that is currently in your position, of how to maybe make their setup just that little bit more professional?
Oh gosh. Okay. Where to start? Well, the first thing I would say to everyone is get insured. It's actually quite difficult to do when you're first setting up, because big companies like NFU don't really want to touch you. You know, they don't want to insure everything under an umbrella policy until they've seen that you're up and running for a couple of years. So insurance can often be the hardest place to start when you're setting up as a professional event yard. That's where, if you can get as many qualifications for your teaching as possible, through, say, the Pony Club or BHS, they then offer insurance schemes through them. It's a great place to start. And then insurance companies moving on like to see that you've been insured doing that. So it really does help to put your foot in the door. The next thing is that if you are moving to a place where you're employing people, that is an absolute minefield. So you need to get in touch with the British Grooms Association. You need to know what you're getting into. If you're going to employ someone, you need to do it correctly, fairly, legally, for both of your sakes. So my biggest piece of advice is to ask for advice. You know, there's loads of membership bodies for all of these things. We all have Google now. You can Google absolutely anything you want. And then the other thing is that other professional riders are really very helpful. You'd be shocked how many conversations I still have at all these one-day events that I go to when I'm trotting around the dressage. Other professional event riders want to talk to you, and they want to talk to you about, about how their businesses are running. So it's an ongoing conversation. Laws change, you know, attitudes change. So it really should be an ongoing conversation all the time. And then lastly, put your prices up. I believe you can. You just have to force yourself. Put your prices up. Value your product. Know that what you're offering is good. And you know, it might mean that you lose two clients, but then it means that the next two that come along are going to be even better, you know? So you've got to trust yourself with that one.
Incredible. Thank you so much. I know I've taken up way more time than you expected. So I'm really grateful. And I really, really wish you the best of luck this year and for the upcoming season.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great afternoon.
Okay. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. As always, you can catch up with all previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk. And of course, if you hit subscribe on iTunes, Acast, Stitcher, Player FM, or listen on Spotify, then each new episode is automatically downloaded to your mobile phone. I love seeing what you're up to with your horses. Don't forget to tag us at Horse Hour and use hashtag Horse Hour. Hope you're really enjoying spending some time with your horses. Have a good week and I'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.